Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat.
And this is your co-host, Carl. The Sci-Fi Party Line podcast is an audio program where we discuss your favorite and not-so-favorite science fiction TV shows and films.
Today we will discuss Birdman.
Birdman!
So Birdman, would we call it an independent film? It was entered in the Venice Film Festival or something like that, and it was screened there. And now it's not out in major theaters, but you have to go to like a special art house. It's an art house film.
Yeah. And I guess we should probably preface this right away, seeing as most of the shows that we discuss are science fiction and about space and superheroes. From the previews, you might think that this is a film about superheroes, but not exactly.
Well, okay. First, before we get into the film, I'd like for you guys to know that Carl and I are breathing the same space right now.
How about that? This is a momentous occasion, other than Dragon Con, to have Kat in the same room as me while we're doing a recording.
Let's high five.
High five.
You see? That was a week ago. You gotta hear it.
There we go.
That's not just me clapping by myself.
Now she's about to hit me in the head, so that's not going to work. But okay, yes.
Why are we so bad at that? Okay, boom.
That was a solid one.
All right, yeah, So we went to see this film together, and I wouldn't say immediately after. We like did some other stuff, but we said that we would restrain from discussing the film until so we don't know what each other thinks, other than I asked Carl that we wanted to podcast this, and he was like, really? You want to podcast that? So, I mean, he didn't sound like that, but
I really didn't sound like that. No, I did not.
But it felt like me to that, because I was just like, of course. Like, why would you even have to ask? It was a Birdman. So let's get into Birdman, starring Michael Keating. I don't even know what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Emma Stone. You had Edward Norton.
That's right.
In this.
That's right. And Norton.
This.
Zach Galifianakis.
Mm-hmm.
Was a very frustrated manager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this film, first let me start out saying, well, when I saw it, I thought it was going to be more like Galaxy Quest a little. Or just like a Dark Galaxy Quest. I didn't really know what to expect going into this at all. Didn't read any reviews. Went in straight blind. How about you, Carl?
Same. It's just the same. I saw a dude in a bird costume. I like Michael Keaton. I like to support indie films. I said, let's give it a shot and just see what happens.
Yeah, because I thought maybe it was going to like harken back to like Batman or something like that. There was a George Clooney joke that I didn't quite know what was going on there. So I thought, wait, was that a George Clooney burn for the Batman? I don't know. But if it was kind of like missed and clever at the same time. So I don't know.
It was subtle. There were a lot of subtle
things. Yeah. So
all right. So again, now I suppose we just yell spoilers right now, because this film is not what you expect in a lot of ways. So please understand, in order for us to discuss it, we're gonna have to start to give away some things about the film. But one of the first things is, this really is not a movie about superheroes or the life of superheroes. It's more like the life of the actor who had played a superhero and how he's trying to get away from that experience. I am not Spock is what he's trying to do. He's trying to get away from the character that made him famous and to be recognized as a serious actor. And I guess that's he wants to do it in the theater.
Yeah, he does. Now, that sounds simple enough, but there was a lot of other layers to this film.
Yep.
Now, the first thing that started screaming to me before Edward Norton showed up on the screen, that this was a modern Fight Club for me. This was like very self-aware. It was very internal dialogue, very... It was the pulse of what I was feeling. Like, we just recently had Marvel make a really huge announcement about its slate for the next upcoming films, Black Panther, blah, blah, blah. And I just started to feel like, when does this start to be too much? When do we start to feel the pain of having so many Marvel films that we are buckling under the big, massive Hollywood cock that is Marvel Studios? When do we get tired of it? Wow. And
she took it there. Cock with Birdman. Do you hear that? You hear that, folks?
But I was just starting to feel like I'm kind of getting... I'm not bored, but it really took me a really long time to see Guardians of the Galaxy. I enjoyed it. We will discuss that later, Carl. Okay. But I was looking for something different. And what this film kind of does on one level is tell us... it's kind of making fun of us the way Fight Club made fun of us for shopping at IKEA, wanting to, you know, shop out of the Hochschild collection, and just being like calm, like Hindu cows. And this was kind of like that, in a way that, you know, we've become mass consumers of these cookie cutter hero films, and this is what we come to expect: blood, explosions, aliens, all these other things. And because we've become unsophisticated with taking in movies or appreciating movies, this is what they shovel out to us, and then what we expect back. But on the same token, they've been given this to us, and maybe we didn't want this, but now we're so used to it that when you do put out something that's thought-provoking and an artsy film, people are not going to appreciate it, because, hey, you've been feeding us this crap all along. We're used to it, and you feed us something like really thought-heavy. We don't want to deal with it. We don't want the emotion. We don't want the raw. We don't want the grittiness. And so I think this film addressed that in a really good way.
Yeah. The other thing is, we are very used to high-quality theater productions, special effects, and all that. But this really was a movie about live theater performances, mm-hmm. like on stage. And there's a different way of acting when you're on the stage in front of an audience. There's a different way of acting and a different experience being in an acting theater, a Broadway theater, versus trying to put something on for a major Hollywood film. Not just in terms of the quality of the acting, but there's something about the imagination of the audience comes into play, and there's also something kind of magic about seeing a person in front of you create that world on stage. And I don't know, even if you've been in high school play or any sort of acting, even backstage, there is a certain chaos and magic of the live performance. And because so much of this film was about what happens backstage at one of those performances, you get a whole other feel for what the performance is like. I mean, they make a little joke about stagehands and people just randomly showing up and being in places where you don't expect them to be. Mm-hmm. When you are putting on a performance, a stage performance, it's like that. There are people hanging from over your head. You don't know. There's someone on the floor down there. There's always someone running around in a rush, and you're trying to remember your lines and all. When you're watching this film, independent of the story that's going on and us getting to know Michael Keaton's character and his issue, and he's got some family things going on, being immersed in the chaos of live theater production and what it takes to put on a show like that, this is one of the rare times I have seen it on film and been able to feel what that was actually like on stage. And the camera work.
I was just going to say it. Don't steal it from me.
Okay, go
don't
ahead.
Steal
go,
it from
go ahead,
me.
Go
don't
ahead.
Steal it from me.
Go ahead.
It felt like the whole film was one long shot.
What? Yep.
Mm-hmm. It felt like it was one long shot. It was beautiful.
The camera work was very surprising.
It felt like the camera was its own character because it was not one shot. I read because I needed to know,
sure,
of course, but it was manipulated to look that way because there was no way that they can go for this up close shot that they had, and then they did this one thing where they pulled through
window.
like a window and then a grill of like a air something or something, and I was like, okay, no way this is all one shot. But it is so beautifully done. They kind of flub lines a little bit to make it feel like theater, you know, because theater isn't perfect. You don't get to do retakes live.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the lines were just like kind of messed up. But when I started to see that it was one long shot, I thought of Eric because I was like, okay, Eric is gonna enjoy the hell out of Birdman because of the way it's filmed and directed.
When you are in the theater, you're never alone, right? I mean,
yeah.
I'm joking about that. But the camera did feel like a person was there. I mean, just the way, the eye level of it, and you could feel it following people as it was walking around, and the smooth, fluid motion. It really felt like a tangible presence during the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, indeed, yeah, the camera is quite significant in all of this. And if anything, this is a movie about the theater, Broadway, and what it takes to put it on, a performance, and the characters that you have to encounter to put on a Broadway performance, between the critics and the temperamental stars and how hard it is to fund it. All that stuff. I mean, you know, independent of Birdman, we haven't even gotten to the real story.
Yeah.
But we're just trying to draw the frame of what was going on here, so you know a little bit more of what to expect when you're going into the movie. Because it's about...
One more thing about the frame is a thing that I kind of... This is hard to admit that I dislike about theater is the visceral feeling of it. The it is kind of clunky and can be cheap and it's not perfect. Whereas you have a Hollywood film, everything is tight shot. You can shoot it multiple times. It is edited to within an inch of its life. In theater, it's like, hey, if that person has a pimple, you're gonna see the makeup over it, or if they flub the line, or this wig is bad, or you're gonna hear the shoes on the I don't know. It's just something about film that I like, even though it's kind of insincere versus a theater's truth. I just feel that the theater is too truthful, and I want something just a little bit kind of regurgitated to me, like a baby bird, like a mama and a baby bird,
see?
In the form of Hollywood. And that is a diss, but I don't know. I like being able to go back in, like speaking from like a costume standpoint, I like to be able to go in and adjust things until they are perfection. But as an artist, sometimes, because I like things to be perfect, right?
Yeah.
But in theater, things are never perfect. The lines are never perfect. They're different every time. And, you know, for somebody who likes to put things into boxes, that could be challenging. So, that's just a little bit about...
There's a big difference between experiencing something that's been created for Hollywood movie, motion pictures, and seeing the performance live. One of the things that they really that comes out as interesting in this film about the theater is the jazz-like improvisational nature of what happens when you're on stage. And we'll get into it a little bit more later, but he goes through at least three previews, you know, run-throughs in front of an audience before the main performance. Each one is totally different, and this stuff has gone wrong in catastrophic ways. But the way they pull it together, that's where the jazz is. That's where the improvisation is. Where they gotta somehow, no matter how wild, how much the mess is falling apart, you gotta come back to the line. You gotta stay on line, and as the audience, you get to see a new performance every time because it's never going to be the same one twice. That's
very good, yeah.
That's it. So in some ways, it's good because that's, like I said, that's the jazz, improvisational nature of modern theater. However, because of that, it's not always going to be a winner. They're not always going to come up with the right line or do the, or when somebody's phone goes off in the audience, you're not going to have the clever quip to pull that together. So sometimes it's magic and sometimes it's like bad Saturday Night Live.
But yeah, that's true. I really liked the rant Michael Keaton did to the critic about, you know, how critics are just, and we're critics right now.
Of course.
And I don't think that I would ever try to be an actor. I'm not really interested in that. So I'm an artist in a different way, totally. So being able to critique what people do on a weekly basis, TV shows or whatever, it is easy. We just sit here with our little microphones and say, we like this, we don't like that, blah, 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 blah. So Mike Keaton said to the critic, she was just like, I'm going to destroy you because I resent you, Hollywood person coming in here thinking you with your charm or whatever can come into my town and with my form and just put your Hollywood jazz all over it and I'm supposed to fall all over you because it's supposed to be great and this is just freaking pet project. No, you need to be keeping it real. You need to be on Broadway, from Broadway. You need to understand the culture, and you don't. You're just coming in here with your celebrity and thinking that's going to sway people to thinking you're a true artist when kind of you're nothing but a fraud.
Michael Keaton's character had a rough time in this film because all throughout it, you're trying to figure out what his motivations are, what the motivations of the people around him are. I mean, okay, let's just back up a little bit and just give you a really quick overview. Birdman, Michael Keaton's character, sort of like, you know, an old Adam West played a superhero character, made it big in Hollywood. But for reasons, and I'm not sure it's entirely clear, I guess he just decides he wants to become a real actor. He didn't find that satisfying, and he wants to do something a little bit more genuine.
Well, I think after the fourth film, it was only two films? Okay. Then he got old. So he made it, it felt like that he, I thought it was four.
Because remember the poster was two, and he's like, that's it, after two, that's it. And they wanted him to do three.
Oh, okay. So, well, he did so many of them, he didn't want to be typecast, and he got older, and he wanted to be taken seriously.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, so in his effort to try to reconnect to his acting roots, he remembered that one of the first times that he really decided that he wanted to be an actor is when the author of a play that he was in high school or something like that approached him after the performance or gave him a signed cocktail napkin.
Yeah.
That says, you know, that was the most truest performance of my work that I've seen. And so he took it to heart, and that was the play that he put all of his money and all of his time to try to bring to life. But okay, so we know all of the craziness of what it takes to get a performance on Broadway. I mean, it takes money, it takes the right kind of connections, it takes being able to fill the movie house, you got to have the right material. All of this stuff is wearing on him, and it's coming at him from different directions, and for whatever reason, maybe he hadn't anticipated that. It's taken a toll on him. Of course, he's got some family issues. He's divorced, and his wife is around. His daughter, he's been estranged from her, and she works on the set with him. So all of this emotional chaos is going on, and the only thing that he really seems to be focusing on is trying to make this performance real. On one hand, you can understand why. He's putting all his life, and he's trying to get grounded again. But at the same time, he had so much, of course, in terms of he had a wife, he had a daughter, had all this other stuff going on that it seems like he's kind of let fall, either because of his acting, because he wants to do this performance. We don't know. He just, it comes out repeatedly he wasn't the most attentive husband or father. So it's like he's trying to redeem himself in a lot of ways, but the most elemental way is through this play. Then comes the issue of actors he's casting in this performance, and the first actor that he has in one of the lead roles is not quite... He's a bad actor. He's just not doing it. Not doing it for him. And so, in an effort to find the right actor, he finds an actor.
No. In an effort to get rid of him, he has a light fall on his head.
Now, okay, see, look. There's this other thing about this movie.
Oh, God.
Which is... There are these moments where it seems like Michael Keaton... His character has superpowers.
Right.
Where he has the ability to levitate or he's moving. They're just these little hints of it. So don't think that's what this movie is about. They are hallucinatory. It seems like they're hallucinatory because I don't recall anyone else ever seeing them.
Right. That was very clever. It was very clever the way they did that. Yeah.
But the thing is there is this moment where he's getting so frustrated with this bad actor that a light falls and hits the guy and knocks him out. And he says that he did it. He says, I was responsible. I did it. But you never see him. He didn't, you know, physically. Was it his psychic powers?
Yeah, he kind of has the force.
Well, but see.
Or telekinesis.
Maybe he just got lucky. We don't actually know that's
so, what like, happened. I think another part of this is that he has an ego problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a generic way to say it. Because, you know, everybody thinks that somebody who has a good... who has good self-esteem has an ego problem, but he has a problem in that he needs to feel powerful because he doesn't. So
well-liked. It's not just powerful.
Yeah, he needs admiration. Mm-hmm. He wants to be loved, but his ex-wife says he confuses love with admiration, and I don't think that sunk in for him. But that was a really powerful line in the film. So this guy, he speaks to the world, and his achievement is through his art, and that in our culture, or in the art culture, you sacrifice everything for your art. And to see him doing that, which includes his wife and his kid and his relationships, to make this one thing work, it was just powerful because, I mean, I'm pretty sure that anybody who creates anything can relate to that and see how, like, you know, damn, maybe I've been an asshole, or what is really important? Is it these people in my lives, or is it just some random people out there recognizing me for the powerful person that I am? So, in an effort to show people he's powerful, he has an inside voice telling him he's powerful, and he imagines that he's telekinetic.
And what is the inside voice that's talking to him?
The inside voice is his Birdman. So he feels like, I would say that Birdman was his calling, and that perhaps that's who he truly is, perhaps in spirit, but he wants to run away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, before you realize that he may not have these powers, they could be hallucinations, you think, man, this guy is powerful and no one around him can really see it. Or he's hiding these powers to protect people from knowing that he's powerful. Yep.
Now, see, we as fans of science fiction and sci-fi, you're watching it and you're thinking, does he really have superpowers?
Yeah.
And he's trying to keep it away from people or not? But... that's just kind of like our wishful thinking, because it pretty much seems like it's sort of a hallucination of what he's going through and what those powers. But you don't know. We don't know.
I think we know, because when someone else walks in the room...
Instead of things flying around by his mind, he's got his hands on stuff throwing it around.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that might be the case. That might be. But so to reinforce your views about... real art is when you sacrifice to create something. I think the fact that he walked away from the Birdman franchise is another gesture of that. It wasn't just that he was getting older. I think he really started feeling overwhelmed by the artificiality of what he was doing before and wanted to try to do something more real. And to walk away from that kind of money and that kind of adoration, which was important to him, to try to start up something that, you know, who's going to watch this production of a book that nobody really, you know, knew about? That was, again, him being genuine and sacrificing for his art, and was something that even before he talked to the critic should have been recognized.
Was it his ego?
Well, good point.
Because he was doing this one thing and he got really big and he thought perhaps maybe he was more talented than he was. Then he decides, hey, I can do this one thing, but it's artificial and I'm miserable, so I'm going to do this other thing and I know I can pull it off because I'm awesome.
Well, but maybe, but if he carried himself with certainty into this, I would say that was just about his ego.
But on the outside, he had certainty. We got to see him from the inside.
Well, yeah, but the inside is the truth, though.
But what I'm saying is we saw him carrying himself without certainty because we got to hear his inner voice.
Right.
We got to see his behind the scenes. But on the outside, like people coming up to take pictures, he was getting autographs all the time, people begging to take pictures with him. That is part of his admiration that he brushed aside. So on the outside, people think he's great, and he doesn't recognize that these people think he's great. Oh wow! I forgot where I was going. Woo!
Well,
where was I going?
I'm not sure. I wasn't quite sure, but I'll just say.
Think looking at you being confused made me forget. This is your fault, Carl.
Well, see, this is face to face. This is what happens when you record and the person's right there looking at you, going right in front of you. That's that. Well, okay. So, I'm just gonna say again. Since we saw his inside voice and what he was thinking, he just seemed insecure about how this was going to go. To me, from the start, his producer buddy always seemed to be on the last, you know, straw. Like, I don't think this is going to work. He needed to be talked down repeatedly from these emotional crises. If it was purely his ego that led him to this. And he thought, because I'm so great, I can do anything. It seemed like he would march into this. He would have, even inside, in his mind, he'd have that kind of confidence. And things would fall down around him to try to make him wake up. But he just seemed scared, like, from the start of this. I don't think this is going to work.
But I think that's how creativity and art works. On the outside, I think this is what I was kind of trying to say. To other people, he's a great guy and he's doing this great thing and they admire him from afar, but they don't see him making the sausage. They don't see the insecurities. They don't know that he hears the voice. They don't see the backstage that looks like a trailer park. They don't see the gritty inside of what goes on behind the scenes. What they see is this massive person and personality who's done this great film, who's inspired them and all this other type of stuff. They don't see. So we see the insecurity, or like when I'm just trying to relate to this, like when I do a collection, right? Or I'm doing something, sewing, or I'm creating art, I'm a mess. And it feels a lot like this film. But when it's time for showtime, you're all smiles, you put it together, and it looks wonderful, and you know it's all come together. But what you know is that it's all held together with duct tape, pins, and a shoestring, and a hope and a prayer. But everybody else sees that on the outside that it looks really great and you pulled it all together because you're all smiles and it looks good from afar.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's a very passionate expression, artist. I hear what you were saying.
So I'm saying, like, yes, he did fall apart, but we got to see that, but other people didn't get to see that.
Well, people that were close to him did, though.
But everybody was like that were close to them. That's the vibe. But on the outside looking in, you think, wow, these people have great lives. They have, you know, they're celebrities. They get all this admiration. But unless you're inside the grit, behind the scenes, you don't get to see, like, you know, they don't have all this money. They don't have all this things. Things are not like backstage is not a palace.
And it also depends on the kind of art, because something tells me that his backstage theater experience was different than his backstage Hollywood experience. So in this environment, where he was a little closer to his real creativity, you could see he was sacrificing a lot more on a daily basis, yeah. Because he was living a little rough there, living a little rough.
And by little, Carl means a lot rough. I mean, it was shocking.
The man fell out drunk on the street corner, woke up next morning for his performance.
His pillow was a bag of trash.
That was rough. There's no symbolism there. Nothing subtle about that.
My favorite is when he went outside to smoke and his robe got caught in the door and he had to go around front in his underwear with a bad wig and perform the preview, just kind of wing it.
For Birdman.
Yeah. I didn't mean to
steal your... Being a part of the creative experience of Birdman, I mean, that is the thing. When you're watching this film about theater, you really do feel the duct tape and baling wire of everything. You really do feel how it is a surface of realism. It totally does not represent what is actually going on in the real world. And how confusing that can start to get, because when you're watching this, you recognize this is a play. I mean, if we put ourselves in the world that we're watching here, okay, it's a play. And it might be a play, perhaps not about the most important work in this world that we've seen. It's important to him, but just not, let's say, you know, mm-hmm. the book that was written, mm-hmm. not the most important work. And you would think, because of that, that you would be able to separate yourself, not as an audience, but I mean as a participant in the theater, that you'd be able to say, this is just an act. This is just a performance. I'm just acting and putting on a good show. But when you see how much people have sacrificed, how much money has gone into it, how many people have fought for this role, now you're on Broadway, suddenly the virtualness of it takes on this alternate realism.
Yes.
All of its own. And it becomes so important, even though it's quote, just a play, even though it's just, when you start to see how much people have put into it, then even though it's just a performance, how important it is takes on a whole nother kind of light and another gravity. And that moment where he sits down and starts to talk to the critic the first time, you know, when he goes over and he brings his little drink to her, because he knows that her review will either make or break the performance the next night. On one hand, you recognize that the critic is really just, you know, spitballing and shooting stuff down and doesn't have a lot of skin in the game. But on the other hand, you recognize that the critic is trying to fight for what she believes is the integrity of actual acting, mm-hmm. of what's possible in the actual theater. And then you have to contrast that with, we recognize that Michael Keaton's character is sort of a Hollywood guy and maybe hasn't been that genuine on stage, and we'll talk about how he is constantly being upstaged by the what we could generally call the better performer of Ed Norton during the. We can talk about that, but you start to contrast her desire for a genuine actor and genuine, you know, commitment to what it is to be in Broadway and all that, to what he sacrificed to get there, and what he's put into the performance. And on this third run of it, you really realize all that he's invested in it is starting to make it even more real. It's starting to make it more of an actual, real performance from him. And so you're kind of rooting for him because you want to see him succeed because you know how much he's put into it. you're stressed because of the critic, and you recognize that she's right from her perspective.
It is true.
That this dude just walked into Broadway and didn't put the same kind of time and sweat in as some other folks and you know, quote, real performers who have invested their life to try to get there. And he just waltzes in with his, you know, high school play and tries to make this work. So that tension between those two at that moment is really something you don't see too often in a movie. And
it's gold.
Yeah, it was surprising. It was surprising to appreciate the meta realism within a play. I mean, within a movie about a play, about the real Hollywood versus actual acting versus commitment versus sacrifice, all wrapped into one scene. You just don't see that too often.
It's artistry, man. Another thing that I thought was really great is that, it's kind of bouncing off what you said, is that this play was really about this short story, what we talk about when we talk about love.
That's what the title was.
Okay. And so this play started to blend into their real lives, yep, as they were reciting what was going on about, like, what was love, what was real love. And you couldn't, there was a really a blurred line between when they were actually speaking to each other, yep, or when they were actually quoting lines from the play. And I think it was best done when one of the actors that Regan was banging, she says she got pregnant, and then the baby, but then she went on stage to perform and say she wasn't ready for a baby because she didn't like herself. And it was just like this ethereal backdrop inner dialogue of how she actually felt in the real world about her being pregnant for him. But was that the way she felt, or was that the way she felt because she was saying those lines from the play?
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't really tell what was real and what was, and then turns out she wasn't pregnant, but then turns out, I think maybe in the play, that the lady got rid of it or was having some, mm-hmm, like, I couldn't tell if they were actually perform, this film was a really self-aware performance of that short story, or whether it was expanded to be the reflection of the short story,
yep,
that it was,
yep,
with
you're right. I mean, from the start, it was, there are certain cues that when you're watching a movie, that the movie, especially if it's a movie about theater or a movie about acting, there's this way that you can sense that the actors in the movie have begun to act on stage, right? You know, mm-hmm, if you're watching a movie and it's got actors in it, there's something about the way that they're carrying themselves that you can tell they have begun acting on this part of the performance. Yeah. From the start, watching this movie, you know, we float in with the camera,
mm-hmm,
onto the stage, and the actor, you know, we follow Michael Keaton in one of the first scenes of the movie, and he sits down during a, quote, reading of the play. But it's so seamless as he's walking in, you cannot tell it that he's coming into a reading or if he's sitting down with the fellow actors to discuss, you know, how things are going with the performance. That is one of the first scenes. So you're walking in, and Keaton's there, and you know, he's got his little inner voice, and he sits down at the table with his fellow actors, and they're talking. And you can't tell if those are the lines from the performance or if he's sitting down to talk to the actors. And that kind of stuff constantly happens in this movie, where there is, like you said, it's about how much the play is merging into their ordinary lives.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, at the same time, we're following this guy through his experiences in the arts as a performer, and you can't tell when he's acting and when it's real life. I mean, it just, and I mean, another example of this is when he runs into Norton the first time, and he and Ed Norton sit down for their first reading together.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it even worse, I mean, okay, one of the most obvious cues when you are watching actors in a movie begin to act is they pull out their scripts, right? They've got their little book. One guy, you know, he unfolds his script. The other guy unfolds his script. And they sit across from each other and begin reading. Well, they are beginning to discuss reading the script. And Norton has memorized the whole thing. So he has no script in front. Now, we as the audience are trying to watch. And they're having a dialogue about beginning the scene. Norton has no script. He's talking with Keaton, telling him to be more natural and to be more reactive and to be more in the moment. And the dialogue of them trying to be more natural blends perfectly into the dialogue that they are having in the script.
Yes.
And you are, as an audience, you're trying to figure out, are they acting now, or is this part of the dialogue? Are they talking now? Is this improv? And you're just going back and forth. So there are the walls that you would normally expect, where we could clearly detect, is he a superhero or is it in his mind? Is this what's going on in the play? Is this what's going on in the real world? Are they acting now or are they talking? Just melt away totally. And you were just kind of like the camera, floating around in between these conversations, trying to figure out what's real and what's not real. And it just happens again and again and again in a way that's really, really unique.
Man, it is an amazing, like, I haven't seen anything that good that makes me think and makes me feel the way since Fight Club. Like, this is my new Fight Club.
Your
right
new
now.
Fight Club, yeah.
This is my new Fight Club, and I've seen Fight Club like 100 times. I'm not exaggerating, yeah, either. One of my favorite things is when he wakes up from his drunken stupor on the steps of a brownstone with the pillow trash bag, that he was like, you know what, screw it, you know, I'm a Hollywood actor, if that's what they want, I'm gonna give it to him, because that's what I'm good at. We can have a third bird, man, we can do what they want. And so he just started, and he let the voices in his head really come out, and he started feeling it. And then so what the film did was just took a big mega crap on the superhero films and everything that was out now. So they had this big robotic bird, and there was explosions and blood.
You could feel Michael Bay in parts of that scene. All the bird needed to do was transform, hanging off the top of that building.
It was just like it was like a total tantrum on the state of Hollywood films, and it was absolutely glorious. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It was just the best thing that I've ever seen, because, like I said, I've just been, not that I dislike Marvel films, not that I'm taking a crap on the comic book films and the popularity. I'm glad it's there, you know, but it's starting to feel like, And you know, I'm part of the problem too, because I don't want to see anything if it don't have aliens and robots and fast cars. But I didn't used to be that way, but they fed it to us for so long. It's just that, you know, why am I going to waste my time emoting when nobody cares about my emotions? Why am I going to give my money to something that, you know, disrespects me as a viewer and doesn't give me something that's really good? And I think that there's like, okay, well, you know, this film Birdman, we brought you in with the superhero thing, but we really had a story to tell that we thought you'd appreciate being a smart person. And I feel like they respected me, and they were saying, like, you know, Kat, you're a dick, but we made you a dick, and we're also dicks too, and let's just, you know, have a dick party.
I don't remember that being part of the motion picture. Don't think that's the theme they want you to take away from the film. But I will say, yeah, I mean, when you're used to the explosions and you're used to seeing you know, the Hollywood scale or type of production, you start to forget that you can still do unique things with film.
Right.
And again, just what we're talking about here is really about the feel of this movie. We could sit here and we could talk about what happens sequentially in the film, and it seems kind of mundane. It would seem kind of like a smaller story, but it's about the feeling and about the emotions of the emotions and the emotions that you're feeling as folks are going through things. And it's about how between the lighting and the camera work and the in and out of the realism, the film really does some really unique creative things and allows you to experience a story in a way that is different. And I'm always talking about I want to see something different.
Oh, yeah, Carl.
I'm always talking about wanting to see something new. And so it takes it back to, okay, well, this is certainly unique. This experience was very visceral, and it was also very new. I wouldn't mind seeing a couple more explosions in it, but why can't we see more unique film like this? You're putting $200 million into stuff that's blowing up and's got robots in it. Hey, give me a little something more special.
But not everybody is talented, and not everybody has what the people involved in this. It's like the actors got it.
Yeah.
The writers got it. The director got it. The camera crew got it. Everybody felt this.
Yeah.
This thing is something everybody felt. And I think, you know, do you remember it was a sci-fi film that I think we both watched? I don't remember the name of it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like this chick. She was going to MIT. There was another moon or something. And then she had a car wreck and killed somebody.
Another Earth.
Another Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, it kind of reminded me of that, where it drew us in with a sci-fi trappings, but it had absolutely nothing to do with sci-fi.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, this was Birdman was way better to me.
Well,
but
yeah.
Another Earth had its virtues.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
well, yeah, but I mean, look, that was what, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
So, I mean, one every 5 years? We can't do better than that for $200 million each?
Well, I mean, not everybody wants a emotional piece like that, because I felt kind of duped because I wanted something else. But, you know.
I'm hoping that we'll be able to come up with more of a balance. Because some folks go into this movie don't know what they're getting into. I mean, I hope they understand right away that it's not a classic superhero movie. I hope, you know, someone leaks that out, because if you go in there and you're expecting that, and that's all you're expecting, you might be disappointed with what you see.
So this is where you get to tell me, Carl, mm-hmm. is why you made the response of, I was like, we have to podcast about this. You brought a podcast about that. Like, why would you say that?
Okay, it was for two reasons. One, folks that listen to our podcast, we typically really talk about science fiction shows, and this movie is something different. It's something different.
Well, I mean, we've talked about Avengers and The Flash and stuff. Those are comic book.
Well, but I don't mean that it has a comic book character in it. I mean, it's not a movie about comic books. It's not a movie about superheroes. This is about acting and theater and the family pressures and all that kind of,
it's, but to really me, it's in that though too. I mean, it's a more highbrow Galaxy Quest.
Well, yeah, but Galaxy Quest actually had aliens in it.
I know,
it,
because somebody had to talk them down and say, hey, don't be too heady, and let's just throw aliens in it, and then,
well, no, but I think that was part of the fun of it too.
No, I got it, but I'm just saying, like, this is what, if Galaxy Quest was moody and emo, this is what it would be. Because, yeah, you know, a lot of us are going to see it because Michael Keaton, Batman, then he's Birdman, and then it reminds us of Adam West.
Yep.
And then we know it's going to be like some, what was that film, Kick-Ass, because he had a Batman father or something.
Oh, yeah, Batman ripoff kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's relevant, but, I mean, somebody needs to talk about, like, we are getting a lot of TV shows and stuff like that, and at which point does it become the reality shows of now? Like, at what point does it become crap and played out and people are tired of it and we don't want to see comic book stuff anymore? Like, when does the average person get sick of it? Mm-hmm. And when they do, what's going to happen then? Are we still going to like have these big films? Are they going to go the way of Hellbound, Hellraiser?
Stop.
Direct to DVD.
Do not bring up Hellraiser. There are too many of them.
But I mean, like, what happens? And then will people want to go see something more? Do we want more? Are we tired of aliens and things like that? Like, what happens? And I just thought this film was phenomenal, not because it solved anything, but because it just asked the question and put it out there, and maybe a new crop of people, you know, this is what they're rebelling against. You know, like, we rebelled against, I don't know, baby boomers and whatever the hell they do. And they thought it was like, hey, we're baby boomers and we're the set, whatever they are. And then we was like, no, we're doing our thing. And then so, like, what if they see all these comic book things and blah, 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 and it's like, you know what? We don't want that. We don't want no flying cars. Screw that, you know? And then now it's just not cool anymore.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, maybe it could also be a fight for quality. People just want quality, too, because you can get tired of superhero movies and big-budget films as we've seen it. But I think that if they change the focus a little bit, if things improve in other parts and it's not so much the same cookie-cutter thing that we've seen before, that maybe we'll start to see something new, or we'll start to get some innovation. We'll start to experience the films in a different way, because I like the satire of this film. Mm-hmm. And like you said, how self-aware of culture and all that it is. But I think that maybe because the story is so personal in it, what we are seeing really is the transformation of one guy and his experience in the midst of the world of Hollywood and theater and all that stuff together. It's so personal that maybe it's more about the individual versus something quite that broad.
But I think, though, that this film, you have to see yourself in one of the dialogues that they have, in one of the monologues, dialogue, whatever. You have to, like, well, I don't know if other people will, but I just saw, like, it was like a mirror, you know, to me. It was just, it's just one of those things that make you think about just straight up navel gazing, you know? And I think that's why it was so personal to me, because it just had so much to look at and so much to think about, and like, who are you and what are you doing and who's really important and what's important and who are the people that are important to you, and are they, like, his daughter was really disappointed and to the point where she started to hurt herself. And was what he doing so important that he hurt the people around him just to do this thing and to feel whatever it is that he was feeling?
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow, we getting deep here on the sci-fi. But it just makes you think that. And, like, you know, our films that we usually review, we don't get that. They don't get that deep.
We don't get that deep into characters of the things that we watch. No. I mean, not because we don't want to go there. It's because they don't really give us that much to work with.
No, and if we do, we're reading too much into it.
Typically, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, there was a lot going on here. This movie has some layers. It had multiple layers. So.
I feel like I went to church, man. It was great. Like, I'm telling you, like, Fight Club blew my mind for, like, 5 years. I think this thing, I'm going to own it. This is something I will watch the special features and stuff.
Wow, what would the special features be like for this film?
I don't know, but this...
I mean, we're already behind the scenes. This is behind the scenes.
I know, it's so meta, man. I love it. I just, because it breaks your brain with how subtle. I mean, to see something, when you see this thing, it's just like, wow. It feels like something you would have thought of if you had thought of it, because it's so awesome and you feel like you're part of it, but you're not that awesome because you didn't come up with it. But when you see it, it's just like, this is exactly what I was looking for. This is the experience that I wanted.
And here's something else that you mentioned it before, but I feel is important to reiterate. The movie doesn't exactly resolve what's going on. Yeah. This is a stream of consciousness, emotional experience.
Yes.
If you expect this to wrap up with a nice bow at the end or to explain one way or another what you have seen, this is not your film.
No, yeah, Fight Club, it had a very definite ending, mm-hmm. and it was kind of understandable. Well, it was understandable. This, we don't know, like, exactly how much of his flying around was suicide attempts. We don't know if the very end was him flying or if it was a suicide attempt because of the way the actress looked at the end, the direction, the literal direction of her eyes. Yep. We have absolutely no idea what happened, and I loved that because yep. it was the perfect ending because I expected this to get so... oh my God, it was a one Requiem for a Dream. I expected to go that. Don't ever watch that.
No.
Because you'll want to slit your wrist.
Wow, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, don't ever watch that. Okay. So anybody who have seen Requiem for a Dream, you know what I mean. So I thought this was going to go there, but it spared the audience and left it kind of ambiguous. I mean, pretty much tell that he probably committed suicide.
Maybe.
I don't think he's not flying.
Yeah, we don't know. Man survived a bullet. Maybe he's a superhero. The point is, the stream of consciousness, emotional experience of this, I think is what they wanted us to focus on. They don't tell us how it starts. They don't tell us how it ends. It's really about appreciating the dynamics, the interaction between the different characters, what they're going through all throughout the story, all these different pressures that come into play, and how this virtual world becomes so real in so many different ways. Doesn't need to end. It was just about introducing us to this world and showing us what it's like to be a part of that and feeling what it is to be driven by that. It was powerful. That was powerful. That's why you should go to see this movie.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you feel changed?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
How?
Well, one thing, it took me back to, okay, I did stage acting when I was younger.
Really?
Yes, I know. I don't strike you as a theatrical, dramatic person.
He is doing Doctor Who.
I'm doing Capaldi hands. Thank you. But I was a thespian at one point in my life.
Question mark.
And there was a moment during that time where you can start to lose perspective.
Mm.
You know, you can start when everybody is pushing you to take on a role or to do something, and you look around, and I'm just acting, right? I'm just acting. But I'm looking around, and the scene that I'm acting has got 15 people, depending upon what you say, in order to get their marks right, in order to get the set pieces where they're supposed to be. 15, you start to think that you're an important person. That ain't true. That is not true in the greater scheme of things.
And that was said in this film that I thought was absolutely excellent. You are not that important. What makes you think you're that important? You are not crap. The daughter said that to him, and it was just powerful.
But in a situation like that, it's like your reality can start to slip away.
Yeah.
And even though you ought to know better, that this is just a show. It's never just a show. Everyone is a unique snowflake of a performance, and I must give everything to my art. I mean, so you see how it's real, but it's not real.
Yeah.
And that can mess with you. The character that Ed Norton plays.
Oh my God.
In this movie / theater, I've seen actors like that. I've seen people that act like that. And what's amazing is you can respect their artistry, their ability to really inhabit a role and give it everything. But at the same time, there's something not right with them. You know, I don't know if it's a damage or if it's genius or I don't know what it is, but there's something missing there. And when your stage persona is more real, than you as a person. That is a dangerous zone to be, and that this culture seems to empower folks like that.
But he knows it too. On the outside of himself, he absolutely knows that this is going on, and he is kind of powerless to do anything about it. I mean, he literally cannot get it up unless he's on stage.
He is being genuine to his crazy self, and that's respectful. But at the same time, he at some point has to leave the stage, and he has to interact with regular people. And the chaos, the chaos that ensues from just him, his normal being around, it causes a lot of pain.
He was literally Tyler Durden. Yeah. He was Tyler Durden here, yeah. And I think the whoever saw this and put Ed Norton here knew what they were doing. They knew that there was going to be Fight Club fans here, mm-hmm. and they knew that this, I don't know, whatever is here, it just had the same sleek feeling and the same, like, Fight Club feels kind of clumsy now in comparison, yeah. But this is just. This is phenomenal. This was a phenomenal thing. It was absolutely a surprise. I did not expect to look in the mirror of my own soul that from just a film. And I think the people involved would be kind of proud to know that we got that much from their film.
Yeah, yeah. That's the idea. You want to inspire something in your audience, your characters. Something about the characters in the performance should resonate with you. And in a lot of ways, good and bad, the stuff that we saw was resonating.
Yeah.
So that's performance. Acting! King!
So, anything else on this one? Are you looking like you're tired? Me, I could talk about this one. Forever.
I'm spent. My Birdman, multi levels of processing reality between the experience of the film and then going back to try to relive that. I'm spent.
I have given
this audience my all, and I feel that I must go.
Okay, one more thing. Okay,
you see my this is Mike's curtain hand, and she interrupted my curtain hand.
Encore.
Okay, well, I must come out.
Okay. So one of the things that I like is that they kept repeating in the film about this guy who had an accident, and he was all wrapped up in the bandages, and he was depressed because he could not see his wife in the bandages, and then they I've heard this story somewhere before, and I guess I read this short story somewhere or whatever, but he needed to face his wife, and then he stopped being depressed because he needed to physically see her in order to feel better. So I thought it was kind of clever that at the end he had his face wrapped, and that's why I was just like, is this an actual film about Birdman, or is this a meta play about the short story in some sort of expanded, hyper realistic, let me just throw some words out there. You know what I'm saying? Is it like, what did we just see? And wow, they just did things like that throughout the whole thing. Yeah. And I want to watch it 100 more times and pick it apart. This is the one that you watch in slow motion. This is the one that you count how many times you watch it. It's just,
yeah,
to me,
this is gonna be.
This is how I feel about it. I don't know about Carl. He doesn't see. You should see him. I can see him, and he doesn't look convinced.
Oh no, I'm thinking because I really would love to see what a behind the scenes of this would be like. I'm hoping
this is what Carl looks like when he's talking.
Now you shooting videos as a still because I'm holding this spot.
That was photos. Now this is video.
Okay, all right.
Okay, this is what Carl is looking. That's not what he was doing
this
earlier.
Was doing,
but no,
yes,
this is not. That's
is
not what you were doing. So, okay, we need to end this podcast.
This is meta.
No, that's not.
Dwelling on the thoughts.
That's not what we're doing
of
here, sir.
Acting.
Question mark. Yeah, and that's our show. That's our show.
But is it really a show?
Oh, Carl.
Haven't we transcended the show and begun to expose our very hearts, our very lives to our audience? Aren't we all the Birdman? Really?
We'd love your feedback. Give us a call at 773-336-2686.
Lower the walls that stand between us.
You can go to our website and leave us a comment at sci-fipartylawn.com.
Don't let the website be a barrier to sharing your hearts with us.
You can also go to iTunes and leave us a comment there.
Should you choose to share your passions with us, you'll be able to find me at RoboMinister. Kat is at FancyFimbot.
See what I gotta put up with.
You can reach us both at Sci-Fi Party Line on the Twitter, on the Facebooks, the Google Pluses, and Stitcher Radio.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Acting!
My God.
So we've lost everyone. We have lost everyone. They're going to be at home going, what the hell does this have to do with science fiction? Where's the superhero?
End of line.